Hello. Yeah, I know. You probably did not expect to have another episode of Woody Flashback in your feeds, but that is exactly what happened. Yeah, I know it's been a while. I think I posted almost exactly a year ago. So, yeah, life happened, and to be honest, I kind of was dragging my feet on editing this one. Not because of the guest. Dina is perfect and Dina is awesome. But because I messed up the audio recording on my side. So her audio is totally fine, and my audio is 17 ways of messed up. I try to clean it up as best as I can. I listened to it. It is okay. I think you will be okay with it. I'm really, really sorry for it. You would think after, I don't know, 15 years of rap radio and podcasting and all of that, that wouldn't happen. But yeah, when you're rushing and you're nervous and you're doing your first YouTube stream, then stuff happens. So I'm really sorry. I hope you enjoy the episode. I hope you can forgive me. And yeah, with that, enjoy the episode with awesome Dina. Welcome to another awesome episode of Foodie Flashback, the podcast where we talk about food and food-related memories with an awesome and always very special guest. Doesn't matter who's here, they're always special because they want to talk to me and they want to share their stories. And today we have someone I'm somewhat familiar with now, since we've kind of spent I guess a couple hours on YouTube together. Like Apple streams. And I've learned a few things. I'm not going to share that. It's up to you to share. Like I said, it's not about me. But we've had a lot of fun. And you've been doing how many YouTube videos now?
I beg your pardon?
How many YouTube videos have you done now? Well, how many streams?
Last night was my 50th upload.
Wow. Okay. So 50 videos on YouTube. Ladies and gentlemen, Dina. So say hi.
Hey, kitchen's open, y'all.
Kitchen's open.
Yeah, I'm Dina from Silver Lining Home Place, and I'm very, very new in my streaming journey, not new in my food journey. And it's been a wild ride so far. So I do a live stream cooking show where the whole point is to make people feel like they are here at the counter with me. And we have a really good time just cooking and hanging out. I think
and drinking.
I think where we are in our times, it's a good place for people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place for people. I wanted people to feel like they were here and had somebody to share that food experience with. So that's me.
And you've been doing a really, really great job. I mean, it's just very enjoyable to see you cooking. I mean, like you have, for someone who hasn't done this that much before, I mean, you said like you have a couple of years of food experience. I mean, I would say anybody who's like not the newborn probably has that to some extent, hopefully. But you've been doing a really good job, like just showing, like having multiple cameras and showing things. And I think that's partially at least why I want to talk to you on Foodie Flashback and see like where you're coming from, what your story is, how you ended up on YouTube. So my famous two first questions that I ask are like a two-part question, I would say. What is your definition of a foodie, since this is a Foodie Flashback, and do you consider yourself one?
Oh boy, that's an evolving answer lately. foodie, you know, there's this archetype of foodie that seems to come to mind every time I hear it, and I have to push it back a little bit because I just immediately think of it as a label that, you know, I have a hard time with the traditional labels. But so what do I think of as when I first hear foodie before I calm down for a second is somebody who will have the sea urchin foam, you know, on the spoon to cleanse their palate kind of thing, you know, and not my thing, but that's somebody else's thing. So that's that first thing that comes to mind. But when I really stop and kind of pull back and say, okay, where are we really? It's somebody who loves food, knows food, and like really knows it, that knows the science and that kind of thing. And no, I'm not that.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I am. I know some things, but I mean, there's maybe it's a capital F foodie in my mind. Maybe that's the thing. You know? I am very much into the basic peasant foods. You know, simple is what I truly prefer. Yeah, I go off that track, but I really do like that just basic. You know, peas and gravy on toast. Just that excites me food wise. So no,
it's I'm a lady. Foodie, I don't think.
Catch me in about a week.
Yeah, it sounds like a lady. I was just when you were talking about like the what did you say sea urchin foam on a spoon. I was thinking like what would be your variant of that. I was like, what does come to mind? I mean, a cocktail is
one of your things. Probably a cocktail, yeah. Or some kind of, I don't know, if I had to do something like that, I probably would find some simple way to use a vegetable out of my garden. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the requirement was you need to do something like this, I'd find a way to make it, you know, silver lining home place. we're not fancy out here. You know, it's
we're not fancy.
And that's not a dig at foodie. It's that's just not me.
Yeah, and
that's
I think
what that statement is.
And that's kind of the interesting thing about like food in general and the definition of the foodie. I mean this is the 23rd episode of Foodie Flashback. I've heard at least 23 definitions, at least, sometimes even multiple. So it's probably a little bit more. Everybody has a different definition. Everybody has a different approach. Some people like Doc Rock is like, I'm not a foodie. And I'm like, you sure about that?
Yeah, I would have to say he is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like everybody has a different definition. I think that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, and if you know, for me, I think there is a little intimidation, not overtly, not somebody trying to intimidate me, but that term is intimidating to me. I may be fearless when it comes to a challenge, but
yeah. So I can definitely recommend that. I did throw a challenge for you, and if you want to see like what you made, like how that turned out, then you should head over to our YouTube channel. So, early start. I usually like to start the beginning of what the earliest memory of cooking food is for you, and see like where it takes us. So, like, how did you start out? Cook with your grandma or like with your mom? Anything like that?
We had in our home kitchen a table that was like a counter, you know, had storage on both sides, but it was kitchen table height. And the rule was you come home from school and you do your homework at the counter, at the table.
Okay.
And mom was cooking at the table. So I had the great privilege of knowing what happens when she threw cumin in the pan.
Okay. You know,
every day for 9 months a year, I was there knowing what happened when, you know, you throw the oil in and the chicken legs in, you know, you just had this sense of, okay, that's what it's going to smell like next. That's what's going to happen next. And in doing my history homework, I also got a cooking lesson without even knowing it. Mm-hmm. So did you think that was one of the best rules ever?
Absolutely. I fully agree with that. Like, how did that like work? Like you were sitting there doing your homework, and then when you're done, you had to help out, or like, was it more like, okay, when you're done, you can leave?
I was never done before dinner okay. was done. I'm sorry, I'm catching a bunch of static.
Yeah, okay. We're gonna wait at this time for.
There we go. That's great. Thank you. So I was generally not done. The type A personality had to have the right, you know, all my notes had to be right and everything. Mm-hmm. So the homework took way longer than it needed to because of my personality and maybe because I wanted to stay in the kitchen.
Maybe.
You know, yeah. There's that too. There might be some of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always got the first taste of things. Mm-hmm. Before she put the finishing touches on. So I had that education mm-hmm. of knowing what set, what was the, you know, kind of that mid state when everything just needs to simmer and yeah. that final before we played it and we didn't plate things, but you know what I mean? Before it was ready to call everyone to the table.
Yeah. Before I put the pot on the table.
Yeah. Before I get the Malden on there.
Oh yeah.
No, yeah. The Malden's a relatively new thing. Mom didn't do that.
Like you said, you did that for like 9 months of the year with school, your family. Did you cook with your mom at that top point? Like when you had no. time and didn't have like, a work?
No, I didn't. I didn't cook with mom. They had a bed and breakfast for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. And cooking, I think, kind of turned into work for them.
Yeah, sure.
So. And, you know, as a teenager, for sure, as soon as, you know, there's work in the room, you can make yourself scarce. So, mm-hmm. so if it felt like work to them, it probably felt like work to me. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I moved into, you know, working at waiting tables, working at restaurants, did a short stint as a short order cook at a little diner.
Okay.
And that was interesting. That was interesting. It didn't last long.
So, like, were there any like big family? Like, I mean, you talked about the everyday cooking. Were there any big family meals that were like more work and they helped out maybe?
Oh yeah, both of my parents came from families where they were both one of nine children. So
wow.
big families. On my dad's side, I grew up in Eastern Washington, so that's where his family ended up. They migrated there over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at one point I counted 81 cousins on my dad's side. So huge family.
That's massive.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine. I've never counted mom's side. So mm-hmm. Not that I don't count them. I just have not enumerated them. there was a core of probably two, three siblings of dad's that would mm-hmm. get together with their kids. And so holidays, definitely the Easter, Christmas, Thanksgiving, generally New Year, we were all together and there were about 20 of us at the table or 20 of us in the house, I should say. Sure. Now, I grew up in a 10,000 square foot house too. So there was room for us. It was an old engineer's dorm mm-hmm. from when a government structure was built. So it wasn't like we just lived in this mansion. It was just
a big house.
Yeah. There were 13 urinals, I believe.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of cool, but, mm-hmm. Big holidays and everyone could cook.
Mm-hmm.
Dad was right in there. In fact, I think dad handled the big meals more than mom did. He mm-hmm. was a planner. And I think that's where I get some of that. Okay. Here is the menu.
Yeah.
And I need to work through over the next couple of weeks mm-hmm. how I'm going to get there. So, you know, that's probably where the project manager in me started.
Probably, yeah.
Was, you know, feeding an army. Mm-hmm. And even outside of holidays, when I would go home at college, during college for the summers, there were 10 of us at the table mm-hmm. just nightly. So it was always a big thing.
Yeah.
And over the years, I've figured out how to scale it back, so I'm not cooking for 10 every single time. So
yeah, that's a problem with your Jesus family.
I've gotten good at freezing things.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's this, like, this principle that like there is home cooking and there's professional cooking. And the big difference is not the ingredients of it. The big difference is the logistics. And you of pick that up. Like, I mean, it is knowing, okay, I have 20 people coming in and I need like whatever, how many courses. And what has to happen when and how much we need working, whatever. That's so important. And that's an important life skill that you have there.
So, yeah. Not just being able to say, okay, this is when it's got to happen, but the timing to plate it and all mm-hmm. of that as well. So big holidays. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I really cut my teeth and watched how it all came together. Mm-hmm. Dad was famous for trying new things.
Mm-hmm. How did that turn out?
He loved to make pumpkin pies. Mm-hmm. And the day after Halloween, he would be at every grocery store in town buying up every single pumpkin that wasn't sold. And for weeks, the kitchen would be processing pumpkins.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine that.
Dude, we only eat pumpkin pie like twice a year. Why do we need so much? I found out why, because he put pumpkin in everything for a really long time, to the point where that's not one of my favorite foods.
Oh, I can totally see that. I have that same thing with spaghetti these days. Like for I don't know how long, probably 10, 15 years, every Saturday, my dad made spaghetti. And I mean, at some point, they're like, I'm done. I've had it all. Like, no more.
Yeah. I've tried to change that, though, a little bit by mixing it up, trying to find a different way to prepare mm-hmm. it to make it more interesting.
Yeah. And
since he passed away, I've actually kind of made peace with the way too much pumpkin pops. And it is a little bit of a homage to Dad when mm-hmm. I make a pumpkin pie. So yeah. there that's part of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't... Go ahead.
Yeah, with enough distance and with that connection, you can make it special and say, okay, like this is like whatever, once a year thing, and then it's special, then it's fine. Like you don't have to have it more often, like once a year, fine.
Once a year. So you get the requisite.
Exactly. Yeah. So when did you really start cooking?
I think it was when I was in college. I know that there were a few times where the very first time I looked at a cookbook, I do remember. I think I must have been in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And it was a kid's cookbook. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this the other day, actually. The recipe was to make a little face on a piece of bread mm-hmm. with food coloring and then put it in the toaster. I did not have the motor skills to be controlling food.
Well, 4 years old.
I might have been a little mm-hmm. older, but yeah, I remember Mom and Dad were raging for what I did to the toaster. But, so I probably hung it up for a little bit mm-hmm. after that. But mm-hmm. in college, you know, I'd go home for the weekend or something, mm-hmm. and I'd snag a couple Bon Appetits from Mom's desk mm-hmm. and get back to school and think, man, this sounds really good. I need mm-hmm. to try this in our, you know, little one hob space where you got to come up with your own pans and mm-hmm. knives and all of that. I think that's when I started carrying a pocket knife mm-hmm. Because it was a lot easier than trying to wield a big knife with no yeah. cutting board and all that.
Yeah.
So in college, I've actually made some pretty good things.
You have to be very creative. If you have.
Yeah.
I mean,
I did like a chicken marsala, you know, I'm like, yeah, I guess this is kind of weird to be doing this in the dorm, but you know, maybe I should have known then. Mm-hmm. And since I moved out here, I think that's really when everything changed. I mean, mm-hmm. I've cooked before. I mean, we used to go to these, you know, like what was it called, Lilith Fair? You know, the big concert series, mm-hmm. kind of like Lollapalooza. And yeah, it's out in the country, you know. I would not just bring a cooler with some, you know, chicken and mm-hmm. no, we had game hens with
wow.
chili carrot soup and, you know, in the parking lot, I was mm-hmm. brewing coffee after the show and, you know, making, you know, hand whipping whipped cream. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess this has been a thing for a while.
That's the occasion.
it went latent for a few years. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved out here, I think it truly, I was finally in a place where it was all me and I had absolute control over everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't living with anybody. Moving out here really changed my life. So long story short, I was living in the city for 30 years, had this house for almost 20 years, and circumstances changed in a relationship, and I didn't get the house, even though it was all mine. So we, you know, my pivot was, okay, what am I going to do next? And what I could afford was out in the middle of nowhere. And it was really suitable for me to, this is where I needed to be at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And after all of the crap that I went through over the last few years, when I landed here, I knew within just a few minutes, I knew that this is where I belong.
Yeah.
And it didn't take very long after that to know that that was my silver lining. That this place is where I absolutely belong. And everything I went through was leading to here. And that's why I call it silver lining place.
I
started gardening when I was when I moved out here, and it was one little 3x7 plot at the beginning of the first season. And I think I ended with 5 of those beds at the end of that season.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end of the following season, I was up to 10 3x7 beds.
Okay.
And I keep wanting to go more and more and more, but I know better.
At some point, you run out of time. And space, time, probably.
Well, there's plenty of space. There's lots.
Middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I want to make sure that I can consume it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so
sure.
The grand plan is right now, before I retire, I'm learning how many seeds I need to start in order to get the right number of plants to get into the ground, in order to get the right harvest size to be able to, you know, freeze, can, whatever, to sustain me through the year. So when I retire, I want to know what that formula is that I can just repeat every year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've gotten to the point where in the before times, when we were all allowed to leave our houses, or not allowed, when we weren't as concerned about leaving our houses, I should say. I didn't get groceries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't get vegetables at the grocery store. It would be farmer's market, or I'd grow it myself.
Yeah.
And that was that. Recently, I've dropped with my no food with a passport rule because, you know, kind of hard to do a cooking show with you know, a couple
in the middle of winter. Yes.
yeah. So I dropped that, but and I think it's okay. I think it's all right. So
once in a time, I think so. When you were explaining like your plan or whatever, it sounded like very organized. Like this is like this is the formula, this is the plan. Like there must be your dad coming through again.
Project manager.
Oh well, that too. I want to jump back, like your college days. I want to know what you cooked. I mean, you mentioned chicken masala, but I want to know what your, like, also from your family, what are the dishes that like are your childhood memory?
You know, it's funny. Mom's food was always good. No complaints. I mean, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think of childhood food, you know, I'm going to do the cliche grandma.
Mm-hmm.
It was grandma's cooking.
Mm-hmm.
We lived probably a mile from them when I was in primary school. And I would kind of escape. You know, I'd just get on my little bike and go to grandma's house right about lunchtime. And it was that farmer food, really. Her mother had 60 acres that she owned in Kansas. So she ran a pretty big farm herself. And I think that's probably where grandma learned to cook. And that's where I learned to cook. So grandma, and you know, some of this stuff sounds really gross to people until they actually get to eat it. Asparagus gravy on toast. Love it. You know, you eat a little bit of, you know, saute some bacon, some onions in there, get your roux going, and then, you know, Actually, now before you get the roux going, you know, get the asparagus in there and caramelize it a little, and then build your gravy around it and some nice crisp toast. It's fantastic. It's so basic.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Grandma did wonky things too. Like she would do Jell-O with cocktail, you know, fruit cocktail in there, mm-hmm. and some walnuts, and then she'd wrap up little teeny toys really tight. And you know, you'd get this bite of Jell-O with a toy in it. But it was kind of fun, you know.
As a kid, and that was super fun.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was really fun, and mm-hmm. she had to be thinking. You know, it wasn't just I'm just going to make another meal. She was doing something to make it fun for her too. I think. And that is the true part of it, is that joy that I get in feeding people, and I think that's where Grandma was with those mm-hmm. with the toys, always. You know, as soon as you walked in the house, have you eaten? You hungry? What can I get for you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that people that do that are just worried that you're hungry. It is, you know, it's our way of saying, let me take care of you. Yeah. Let me make you comfortable here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to have a similar experience with my grandma's. It's always the same. Like, it wasn't about the food. It was about taking care of you, being there for you, and nurturing you.
Yes. So. Yes, it's definitely a nurturing thing. And there's a certain amount of grace that comes with when somebody says, no, I don't want to eat. And you're kind mm-hmm. of, at first it's like, okay, well, what do I do next? And the grace is nothing. Mm-hmm. You spend the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I've really learned over probably the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing that, okay, so yeah. we're not going to eat. Yeah. I'm good.
It's nothing personal against your food.
Right. It's not taking it personally. Having pride in what you do, but not mm-hmm. taking it so personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's super
because
awesome.
Food is an individual thing. Mm-hmm. That you know, there's a book. Who did it? I want to say it was Chez Panisse. Alice Waters? No. Anyhow, What We Eat When We Eat Alone. And they just interviewed people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what do you eat when you cook alone? And for me, it's full-on meals. You know, I mean, it's not full-on like courses. Not like that.
It's on the banquet. Courses.
No. I mean, I have done that.
Yes, we do.
I was bored.
Because it's fun.
You know, it's okay, how much can I cook in one day?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's, you know, I will take an hour mm-hmm. on a work morning to fix myself breakfast.
Yeah.
And I'm moving slowly and just relaxed with it. And that's my really, really happy place.
Mm-hmm.
And I may go, oh, crap, I've got 3 minutes to eat this thing that I just spent an hour cooking.
Yes.
But that what I got out of it mm-hmm. was the time cooking it,
mm-hmm.
that energy that came back yeah. into me, not necessarily the calories and the nutrients.
Mm-hmm. Totally with you. I do the same. I mean, I'm not a breakfast person, so like it's not breakfast, but I do that for lunch. I'll take the time. I'll block the time. I have a busy schedule, probably as a lot of people in front of you as well. I take the time. I look at. And as you said, even if it's like also within 3 minutes, there's another meeting. I enjoyed preparing the time.
Yes.
That's it. I wanna go back to the fact that you kind of came from your grandma and then learned about it a little bit more. I still want to know what dishes she made. Like you mentioned the little like surprises.
Grandma was the traditional fare. Biscuits and gravy,
uh-huh.
roast beef on Sunday, fried chicken. It was the standard American fare,
uh-huh.
except she did it exceptionally well. So
she's probably the definition of standard American fare. Like that's the standard.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, I mean It was always good.
Mm-hmm.
Always. I have her cookbook mm-hmm. and have I cooked anything out of it? No.
You should.
It's almost, I should. I absolutely should. Sometimes I think, wow, what if I don't do it right? Well, no one's going to know.
No one's going to know. I think that's one of those.
I should do it.
I think it's one of those things. You can cook it. It's not going to be the same. I mean, it's
definitely not.
Part of it is because it's grandma. Like, you could make it exactly as good as she did, and it's still not going to be the same. Because it's grandma. It's different.
Yep.
So, but I think most people that have food stores have stories like that. If you're lucky.
Yeah.
Well, everybody is as lucky as you. So, coming back, so we jumped around a little bit in your life, like college days, starting to cook. You said at that point you had at least some basic skills, I'm guessing. Where did they come from? Was it just like watching your parents and watching your mom and your dad cook? Or was there also some practice involved?
Back then, it was absolutely from just watching them cook. I picked up some things when I was waiting tables. You know, I'd stand in the back and talk to the restaurant owner while they were working. So I think I probably picked up things along the way there. Things like, you know, boil the potatoes first before you try to turn them into hash browns, because otherwise you end up with this gray, icky mess that mom and dad called hash browns. So, I picked up some key things that way. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the curious mind always goes, well, what if I extend that technique to something else?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's how I've really gotten through life. It's, someone suggested that I try something this way. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. And wow, it worked. You know, and I don't know anything about streaming, but somebody said I should try this and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's probably just one of my life principles, is if you found somebody who's willing to teach you something, you should probably try doing what they say.
It sounds like you have a very similar approach to it, to say, sure, why not? Like, let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to lose?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, worst case, it's not going to work, and then you've learned that doesn't work. Okay.
Fine. Yeah, I mean, you're going to lose some ingredients in the kitchen. That's about it. Yeah. And, you know, frankly, there are very few, I know it's happened, but there are very few times that something has been so terrible that I've just tossed it. So, I mean, it has happened. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
Let's see here. So yeah, I cruised along just teaching myself really over the years. And then just after all this stuff started, and you know, I'm sitting here in my house, my desk is right over there, and you know, my coworkers are in my kitchen every single day. It kind of looked terrible in here. There was, you know, the pantry here was, you know, behind me is beautiful. It's got all the stuff in it. It is your farmhouse pantry, but it wasn't that in March 2020. It was a wire rack that at the time had some vegetable starts. You know, I had my little heat mats and you know, grow lights and everything for my veggies. And then, like, the pantry stuff that's on there now was all crammed on the wire shelves as well. So it was a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
And as I started to settle into, we're going to be here a while, the kitchen started to build itself. You know, it was, you know, I think it'd be really nice to have a lamp over here, or, you know, geez, these colors are all wrong. So it came together, really. And I joke that my kitchen and I bonded during the pandemic.
Feels like it, yeah.
But we did, you know. My mom jokes with me. She goes, your living room and your couch are gonna resign and just leave you someday.
Yeah,
because I don't go in there.
Yes,
you know. She goes, every time I call you, because you know, we video chat. She's like, every time I talk to you, you're in your kitchen. I'm like,
yeah, so,
you know,
the kitchen is the center of the house.
There's 20 hours a day I'm in the kitchen, and four I'm in bed. You know, so yeah, that's what I do. And when I made that connection of, okay, this is the place that you're choosing to be, even though, you know, there's an acre of land around you, there's a whole house around you, you have this is your nest. So make it the best it can be. And when I got what I call the cockpit here, where I stand in my streams, when I got this island, that's when it really started happening. For some reason, it was this that went, okay, it's on. You know, I had the pantry done at that point. It was this put it all together, and it's my spot.
Yeah, and it's
this
beautiful.
Is where I
mean, if you haven't seen it, I mean, for the people listening, it's hard to describe. But it's like from like just watching, I was very jealous because it looks often it's like hardwood and like. It's sturdy, it has a lot of space, a lot of like storage and stuff. It's just good. I can't even explain it. It's just, I saw it and fell in love with it. And that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's when I started cooking. So in the fall, I was doing a project for work and got looped into, long story, you know, it doesn't matter. I took a course online from, it was just a one-on-one, I think it was vegetable cooking course. I had a ton of vegetables at the time. I needed to figure out how to use them beyond what my knowledge was. So, cooking class, I'll do that, sure. And the instructor and I hit it off immediately. And so I took a few more classes from her and then ended up taking like full-on culinary boot camp for 8 weeks in the fall of 2020.
Okay.
And then in January 21, did the part two of the boot camp. So, you know, for 2-3 hours a week, it was, this is how you do this. This is how you do that. And it wasn't always it wasn't always something that I thought I would really like. I learned something.
You learned something,
you know? Yeah, and in the confidence, because, you know, there are 10 other people on a Zoom call doing the same thing in front of you. And that's probably where the camera angles started, actually, because I always put my camera down by the board. Because I didn't care if the instructor saw my face. I wasn't there for her to tell me if my face looked good. I needed to know if I was chopping things. You know, and there was one time when she said, "Hey, stop. You're going to cut yourself," you know? And so yeah, that's probably where camera angles in the kitchen started. Now that I think about it, that had not even occurred to me. I wasn't paying her to tell me what my face looked like. I need you to tell me, you know, what the food's, what's happening down here is right or not. So at that point, you know, I had been toying with having a blog and, you know, had the skills to take the money shot. You know, good photography skills for showing what I've done, documenting the process, but just couldn't get over that hump of actually creating the site. And this past summer, I kept on thinking, I just missing community. And somebody asked me to stream something and I had never streamed anything before. It was, "Hey, can you hold the phone? That's what we need you to do. And it'd be nice if you read this thing while you're holding the phone." Yeah, sure. Well, I was good at it. The reading the thing and telling the people what, you know, not only what you're seeing, but why you're seeing it kind of thing. So, and that makes it sound like more than it was. I was reading the number of the dog in the dog show, but that is really important for people at home who are interested in this because they want to know what dog they're seeing. Otherwise there's no point.
Yeah.
So that's where I added value. And then it was, "Oh, we're having this auction. And we need to do this online." So it was hurry up and learn how to stream an auction. And that's when I fell into the rabbit hole that led me to you. So, and I didn't want to leave the community. You know, I came for the software, stayed for the community kind of thing. But it gave me a platform to do what I really wanted to do. And it was feed people. And I think it wasn't until probably the third or fourth stream in this format that I'm doing now that I really understood that that's what I was doing. when I would make a decision on which way I was going to walk across the kitchen or what story I was going to tell. It wasn't, it was about the food, but it was about what do these people across the counter want to know today? You know,
it's about the story.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to come up with that story on the fly. And I did try to rehearse a story a few times and not rehearse it, but at least have some lined up. And you can't, it's kind of like
there's a planning. There's a special kind of person that can do that. Can plan out a story and like just tell it. Basically read it and you don't even know. I think we're both.
I can cook like that. I can cook like that. You know, follow it rote, but I don't like doing that.
Yeah.
I cook by feel, and that's the storytelling part of it. So now I don't know what's next. I know that I'm starting the garden up, so we're going to see come April, May, June, we're going to start seeing more fresh vegetable type of stuff. And that's going to be fun. I think there's going to be, in some ways I feel like I might be forced because it's like, all right, this is what's going to come out of the garden. So I need to use this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm in control of what goes into the garden and when it comes out almost, not entirely when it comes out, but I can time it somewhat. So, I can start to develop the this is what I want to eat. And I know what's coming.
Yeah.
So, and I do love coming up with new things with the veggies. The first radishes that come out, man, just radish toast. Toast, butter, thinly sliced radishes, salt, a little bit of pepper, done.
Sounds
that
awesome.
That is probably one of the things that makes me happiest. The other one is, just searing them and, with a little bit of butter, cutting the radishes in half and just doing.
Fortunately, I can't eat them. Sounds awesome. I used to love radishes, but these days I can't eat. I want to hook into a couple of things that you said. One was you talked about feeling what you're cooking. And I've discovered there are kind of probably two, maybe a couple more, like two types of people that they cook. There's the follow the recipe to the team, like you plan and you follow. And there's the, there's a recipe, but it's kind of a suggestion. Like I'll look at it and decide like what I want for it and everything else will change. And basically what you cook is never the same. And it sounds like despite your dad's organization skills and your good job, you're very much on the let's wing it side, let's experiment and let's figure out how this works. So.
Absolutely.
Where did that come from?
I love to think that I'm very traditional, but I'm not. I cannot do anything by the book. I mean, I can. Obviously, I follow rules or, laws, but rules and laws really don't have a lot of place in the kitchen unless you are baking.
Yes.
that's important. But no, yeah. I mean, you don't always have all of the same ingredients. You don't always have the same amount of an ingredient. You're not always cooking the same amount.
Ingredients are not always the same. Like
exactly.
you might get two radishes and they're not the same and they cook differently.
Yeah. I mean, if the recipe says one carrot at my house, it would just be
like a massive carrot.
It would be just a giant frying pan full of carrots. And you'd get like one little teeny potato. So you gotta balance it. And I think that's probably what it comes from is everything is different every single time. Because we don't live in a cookie cutter world as much as we think we do. We don't. And I have worked a really long time to understand how different proportions work together. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm constantly experimenting. So yeah, I could see where some people have to have, you know, it's 3/4 cup, go down to 2 ounces of this other thing. And, you know, some people need that. Mm-hmm. They can probably draw better than I can. So everybody's got their thing. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's, you know, the stove, mm-hmm. the counter, the knives. That's where my space is. That's where I work my magic, and other people can work their magic in other ways. And I'm so glad that that's how we all are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes it interesting. And I mean, the kitchen is not a lawless place. I mean, there are certain things and certain like patterns that you still follow. I mean, it's like you made crepe the other night, like last week. And I mean, there are certain steps that you still have to follow. You can just throw everything together and then hope it works. Like there's still a process that you have to follow, even if there is flexibility in it, and you can adjust it however you want, but there's still a process of making it. It's a completely lawless. There are still rules.
I think that's what I enjoyed about that particular challenge, you know, after the fact. I mean, going into it, I'm like, what am I? So the context is Patrice said, okay, tomorrow you have to make crepes. And mm-hmm. I never have made crepes before, period. And so there was a little bit of an, what's going to happen here? What mm-hmm. am I going to do? And I got as far as, okay, now you know how to make the batter. All right, that's good. And the challenge was make it for the first time, mm-hmm. you know, in the stream. So I couldn't even make one. I didn't feel right trying to make one. It felt like cheating. So I didn't. Okay. And you know, that was interesting. And it was that leap of fearless faith. Mm-hmm. But I got as far as, okay, you're going to have to do a filling. All right, Biscoff. I've got some Biscoff butter in the cupboard. So
and you introduced some people to Biscoff butter.
Yeah, I think people are going to be kind of raging at me at that for the rest of their lives.
Well, when it's good, it's good.
Right. But that whole process was kind of textbook Dina of, okay, I know that I have to do this thing, i.e. the crepes, a certain mm-hmm. way, but I get to do something that's essentially winging it. And that's where I landed. What did I do? I mixed, trying to think, the cookie butter and some cream cheese together. Mm-hmm. And then I whipped cream and folded the two together. And then I think I drizzled some more stuff on top. Or no, we that's what it was. Layered the plain Biscoff onto the crepes. Did the nice quartered fold over. Mm-hmm. Plated them. Put the cream mixture on top and then drizzled more. And got the crumbs from some Biscoff cookies on there to give it some texture and body. So that is a good time for me. Not knowing where I'm going to start. And mm-hmm. having to do it on the fly kind of makes me really happy.
Yeah, it definitely looks like it. It's an interesting challenge. When I mean, you've never done something. You have some concept of it. You have enough experience to do it. I think if you threw that to someone who had never cooked before, that might be a problem.
But you have enough experience. Yeah, no. I think you probably went, okay, I think she can handle this after.
Well, I saw you cooking. I was like, okay, she can handle it.
I would hope that you wouldn't have thrown me under the bus.
No, I would have never done that. I would have helped you if you needed help.
I trusted you. And what's going to go wrong? That's kind of the core thing, uh-huh. too, is, okay, so you're going to end up with freaking pancakes. All right.
Exactly.
You know, or they're going to burn, or mm-hmm. they're going to curl up, or whatever could go wrong. It could go wrong. But I don't have enough ego wrapped up in that part of it. There's mm-hmm. plenty of ego wrapped up in all other parts of the day. But that one thing of just trying something that I've never... Mm-hmm. Never before. Thought of doing mm-hmm. and didn't, you know, there wasn't a lead time on it. You know, yeah. it was
a day.
I had a day And there have been other things that I've been challenged in the last month that I had never done before, but I had plenty of time to think it through. And I was mad that it didn't turn out. But other things turned out well. So So there was a big lesson in that week of let it go, you know, and just keep moving because it's really fun. It's fun. And that's what food is. Is just do it. Because you're going to have to eat eventually.
That's another secret of this podcast. I've talked to plenty of people who say, I'm not a foodie, I don't care about food. They all eat. They all eat, and they all have a story behind that. They have things they like, and they have things, even if you, like, a friend of mine from the Bay Area doesn't care about food, has never cooked, and has an awesome wife, also a little, and she can cook so well. And he still has a story because he still, like, despite not caring as much, he still has things that he likes and do. And you can dig into that and figure out, like, where's it coming from? What story is behind him not caring? And stuff like that. So everybody, like, that's the cool thing about food. Everybody has to eat eventually. Grudgingly or not. Like, some people might not like it, but you have to. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. And there's always a story.
Always. I had a roommate once that would eat, I kid you not, nothing but rotini pasta with frozen cauliflower, the cauliflower, carrots, and broccoli blend.
Oh, yeah.
And it absolutely had to be the Kraft light Italian dressing. Three times a day, 7 days a week. That's what she ate.
Yeah.
And, you know, fine, that's what you want to eat, but if that's what you're going to use your stove time for, get out of the way. Could you do that when I'm not really trying to? Mm-hmm. No, it was interesting to see that, because that was her relationship with food, and she was thrilled to have it. It wasn't like, oh, this is what I'm eating today. She was happy to have it, and, you know, good for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I couldn't do it.
No, me neither.
You know, the only thing that I can eat every single day is coffee. You know, I can have my cup of coffee and have not that get old. But I don't think there's food that I could eat every single day and have it not.
Even coffee. Like, there are days when I don't like coffee or tea. Like, I love tea as well. But there are days I'm like, today was one of those days I'm like, coffee. Just don't feel like
I have a lot of days where I don't finish it. I think I make it most days. I've been having tea a little bit more lately. Because I like the ritual of the tea for some reason. And, you know, that's probably another biggie with food for me, is the ritual of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bellying up here and getting the board out and just cutting onions and whatever the thing is. Yeah. So
let me talk about the ritual of tea. I have to think about one thing. Someone once asked me whether I actually like tea. Because I have the habit of making tea and not drinking it. Because I keep forgetting about it. Like, I make it and then it sits somewhere. Like, it steeps for like 3 hours. Or, like, I actually finish it and set it down somewhere and then forget about it. So I'm like, I would say I'm probably more about making the tea than drinking it. I mean, I enjoy drinking tea. So, like, but apparently I like making it more than drinking it.
It that might be some little thing that we all have in common, those of us who cook, you know, is the ritual of some parts of it.
Yeah. I have some chef friends, and for them, as you said, like chopping, like taking a big bag of onions and just keep chopping them. It's total relaxation for them. They don't have to think about it. I mean, it's like they've done whatever, 10 million onions. Like, they're like, we can just keep going and not be able to pay attention to it. It's pure bliss for that. They come in the morning, like early, and just do that.
It's a meditative state in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. My mom used to make really good stuffing for the turkey, you know, and I remember hours and hours of just chopping the celery and the carrots and the onions, because there were 20 people. Mm-hmm. So then you expand that across everything that needed those ingredients throughout the day. And there was some serious cutting going on.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so there's, that's something that I really enjoy, actually. Chopping vegetables.
Yeah, me too.
Really yeah. enjoy that.
Yeah.
I think grandma, I don't know. It seemed like she was making a lot of fried chicken. So I want to say that she enjoyed it, but I don't know. I never ask her that. I loved eating it. I wish I would have learned. Mm-hmm. I had no concept at that point that it was special,
mm-hmm.
That it was that good, and because that was the only fried chicken I got. Yeah. So I didn't know that it was the fried chicken.
Best.
Yeah. And I don't know that any of us that are left know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm wrong. I probably need to start doing some probing questions there, and I might have to fly somewhere to learn from someone mm-hmm. real quick. But yeah.
It's your version of flying to Japan to learn how to make sushi. You fly somewhere to learn how to make chicken.
Yep. I'm here to make the chicken. Yeah.
It's like another friend of mine, like he owns like a cafe and like an event business and so on. And he said, like, I mean, he had like employees or whatever, but he enjoyed cleaning up after the night. And he might have been drunk and whatever, like if it was like New Year's. He was like a robot. He would just like walk around and clean everything up and put stuff in the dishwasher. I love the dishwasher. I don't know what it is about it, but I love putting stuff in and taking it out. Like that's my zen play. Just clean.
Oh, yeah. No, I have a hard time with cleaning. I mean, I'll get it done.
Me too.
But and obviously,
me too. it's just the kitchen dishwasher. It might be connected.
Recording stopped.
Oh, it might just be the kitchen, like that. It's about like because
did I'm, you just hear that?
Yeah, it's I think the recording stuff from Zoom doesn't. I have enough of it. So.
Mom is Filipino, and she cooked a lot of Filipino food growing up, and that's another thing that I did not learn. So now I'll call one of my cousins when I'm cooking
mm-hmm.
and say, okay, all right, what do I do here? And I have messed up some chicken adobo more times than I can get. I'm like, whoa, this is way too much vinegar. Or, wow, how have you had soy sauce before? but boy, when you nail it, when you mm-hmm. get it right, the way that you remember it tasting, that's mm-hmm. everything. That is everything. And yeah. It does let those memories come back. You know, mm-hmm. I think about my uncles a lot on mom's side when I'm cooking Filipino food. They were the cooks in mm-hmm. the family. So there's that.
It's interesting. Yeah, I think we all have stories like that. So I there's probably some science behind that. Like how food and the sensation of food and smells and so on. I mean, a lot of people say, when they smell a certain food, like it takes them back to their childhood. And I think there's probably some scientific like story behind that, like why and how or whatever. But I think we all have that. I mean, it's kind of the definition of comfort food. It's a food that you go back to when you need that. So
yeah,
what's your comfort food?
You know, I think a biggie is the black eyed peas. On New Year's Day. I mean, that's the annual kickoff. And grandma used to cook those.
Mm-hmm.
And I have talked to my surviving aunts and uncles on that side and said, you know, they're like, yeah, she didn't do that when we were growing up. And I just talked to my aunt yesterday or the day before. And she said that she thinks that my mom actually started that and grandma picked it up from mom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really don't know on that one. But that's a comfort food for me. Migas. I love to just scramble eggs with some bacon and, you know, add some pico de gallo or, you know, taco sauce or something like that. And then the bottom of the chip bag, little, mm-hmm. little cheese. And that's a bowl of happiness for me. pretty much any kind of white gravy with vegetables in it on toast. Thrilled. Absolutely thrilled.
Sounds so weird.
It does. It is. Especially it's peas and gravy and asparagus and gravy. If I've got mushrooms, that boy, it's a banner day when that happens.
I can totally see like vegetables and gravy. And if any kind of, I love that on toast. I'm like, it's weird.
Yeah, it is. It's weird, but I think there for me, it's that crunch of the toast and then the soggy middle of the bread. You know, there's it's and it's really here's one. I don't like toast. That's what I really don't like toast. But gravy on potatoes is good. It is not what I want. I want the crispy toast with kind of the soggy, you know, the medium rare bread in the middle and all the sogginess of the gravy. That's probably my go-to comfort food is peas and gravy. That would be the one. Asparagus is kind of hard to get. I mean, I have a freezer full of peas, so that would be the one for sure. And then rice. I eat a lot of rice. That's the
first. I love rice too.
You know, I'm looking at, I don't know, 6 different rices in the pantry right now. So clearly, you know, it's a thing.
And it's not enough.
No, it's not enough. It's all I can reasonably, you know, reasonably have, because I'm not going to go through all of it. And you don't need every single kind when it's a family of one.
Well, who said that you need it? You want it.
So. Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, when you need it, you need it. And no, Arborio is not going to do it when you need Calrose. You know, and Bombas is not going to do it when you need Basmati. Yeah. So you got to have all of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm the same. Unfortunately, moving like across oceans and stuff, I've lost a lot of stuff. I keep collecting rice. It's one of my favorites. Rice and spices.
Spices are another interesting one. I've started doing my own. Like, where was I? I was at the grocery one day and I saw bay leaves, fresh bay leaves for $2.99. And it was probably 20 or 30 of them in this little container, you know, in the plastic container. And I walked, you know, I grabbed them because I thought, okay, this is really interesting. I mean, it never occurred to me to have fresh bay leaves. And so I thought, all right, well, let's go over and see how much they are. And I knew, you know, they're not cheap. In dried jars. And I counted, there were 9 of them in this jar for $12.99. And I'm thinking, why aren't we all buying fresh bay leaves and drying them ourselves? So that's what I did, you know. And I was going through the seed catalog last year and I saw, you know, seeds for paprikas. Hold up. Wait. It's never occurred to me where paprika came from. I knew it was a pepper, but I never really thought about it. And that was kind of cool. So I grew some paprika. And then I had a mountain of paprika in the kitchen for a while, and I had to dehydrate it. And, you know, at first I thought about smoking it. And I
too much work.
This is the spiciest paprika I have ever had. I mean, it's got a kick. I didn't know that. And I don't think we would know those things unless we try them on our own, you know. Yeah, I wouldn't have known or cared probably what the process was. So that gets into that deep research that I love to do. And it's okay, well, it comes from Hungary. All right, that's cool. Well, how do they do it? Because the person in, you know, Colorado telling me how she just started doing it because she thinks it's the right way doesn't make as much sense as the people who are making it in Hungary.
Yeah, for so I'm hundreds of years or longer.
Yeah. So very just it's a lot of fun. That's one of the things that I'm into now is growing it, storing it, using it. And it is a different experience from the spices that I buy, which I will continue to buy because doing your own is a lot of work.
Yeah. I think that's it's fun to do it once to figure out how to do it and to see and then to see, well, is it worth it?
Unfortunately, most of it has been.
Yeah. that's a bad part.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting. We keep talking about stuff like that. And I mean, you didn't do that before the pandemic, right? I mean, you it sounded like you got into gardening and some really during the pandemic.
No, the gardening came in, let's see, 2018.
Okay.
So it was my first spring out 2 years here before. At the home place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, what brought that on was Animal Vegetable Miracle by Barbara Kingsolver.
Mm-hmm.
That book absolutely changed my life. That's the whole, you know, eat local. And it opened my eyes to a lot of things just about, you know, really, that piece of fruit traveled 1,500 miles. Mm-hmm. Do you know how you feel after you've traveled 1,500 miles? How good are you?
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah.
And what is the cost of moving all of that food?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what are we doing to local food economies when we are not eating local? So that I will be happy when we're kind of back to whatever becomes the normal.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do want to get back to farmers markets and supporting mm-hmm. the guy yeah. who's got a little sign that said, you know, what was it? Origin, 1.5 miles away.
You know, I mean, that's awesome.
You can't
and, be
you know,
there.
I mean, you've seen me. Gives to me, it's like, oh, I need a carrot. I'm going to walk 28 feet to go get a carrot.
You should have a little sign on your screen. Origin. Whatever. 0.1, well, not even like 0.01.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been about half acre away. Maybe. You know, the furthest spot. But, and, you know, I'm super lucky. I need eggs. I call my neighbor and say, hey, got mm-hmm. eggs. So, yeah, the food relationship changed when I came here,
mm-hmm.
for sure. Growing my own was part of it, and mostly because I didn't want to waste it.
Mm-hmm.
But during the pandemic, for sure, because it was my way to reach out to people,
mm-hmm.
you know. Again, it was feeding people, showing yeah. people what I'm cooking,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting it up on Instagram. And that's where the journey started, was I thought I was going to do the blog, and I ended up staying for the stream.
And I think a lot of people have similar stories, or I hope, at least from anecdotally, from what I've heard, a lot of people have similar stories about the pandemic. I mean, it might not be cooking, but they connect with something at home. Like they take a different look at their dressing room. Well, I mean, I built out this office set here, basically, during the pandemic. Because, I mean, well, one, because I moved here right before, but also because I was like, okay, I mean, if I'm going to spend most of my week there, and this is my work setup, like literally, like microphone and everything.
Right.
Like, I just want most of
my... Did you start cooking something new, different during the pandemic?
I wouldn't say so, because I've experimented a lot in my life and I keep experimenting. I wouldn't say I have done anything different and before. Like, I keep cooking and I keep doing the same thing. Like, for me, nothing is worse than boredom. Like, right. Once I've done, like, there are certain recipes I keep going back to, like, every whatever year or so, because I just enjoy them. But for the most part, I'm like, okay, done that, bored, what's next?
I noticed that you seem to plan yours, like a couple days out, you know what you're going to do. I've talked to you on a Wednesday or Thursday and you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to have XYZ on, you know, I'm going to have tomato soup and grilled cheese on Saturday. I'm like, how does she know that? That's amazing.
Mostly because I see something and I'm like, oh, I should do that. And then I make it like a couple days later. It's not planned. It's more like, oh, I saw something that I like today someone talked about vegetable lasagna and I'm like, oh, I'm going to do that tomorrow. It's like, yeah. I haven't done that in a while. Let's do that tomorrow. It's not planned. And I could change my mind tomorrow. Like, I see something else. I'm like, oh, okay, let's do that instead.
I guess I'm kind of the same way. I mean, when I decide, all right, it's time to make some bolognese,
mm-hmm.
I have that in my mind for a few days because I don't just make some bolognese. I'll make gallons of bolognese.
Yeah, the only way you can make that properly is
exactly
gallons.
Exactly. There's no reason to make 2 cups of it because that's no. And you know, I'll reduce it down 5 mm-hmm. times, and it is an event. Carrot cake with the big frosting. That's mm-hmm. something that I have to think about for a couple days. Of mm-hmm. all right, you're going to do this, and it's a commitment. It's time commitment. Mm-hmm. So So yeah, I guess I do plan ahead in those ways, but the everyday foods now.
Yeah, it's, I mean, today I made cinnamon roll, and I wanted to do that since Tuesday. I just didn't have time, but I really wanted to do it. And today was the time. I'm like, okay, I'll do it today. Nice. I did that. And I haven't done that in a couple of months.
I need to do more baking. I think that's where I really need to focus next is all right. Get the Baker's Apprentice book out and just dig in one at a time.
There was one suggestion in the chat, in this life. You should cook yourself. Like, you should do it like a show or a couple shows, just cooking it like through your grandma's cookbook.
Through grandma's cookbook. Yeah, that would be interesting. Some of the ingredients in there, I don't even know what they are.
That's an interesting challenge.
I mean, I've had to go back and go, what is this thing? And, you know, now it's called baking soda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes you just have a different thing.
Yeah. So it you end up going into the food history rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something I did learn about that cookbook, the first few recipes in there are clearly grandma's.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff at the end, I can see being, you know, because there's from Mrs. Such and Such, or mm-hmm. tried this at such and such event. But the middle of the book, she copied down word for word from some book from like the Virginia Ladies Guild of 1929 or something like that.
Wow.
Because I was looking up one of the ingredients and I couldn't find it. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to look for this recipe name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did that and down the rabbit hole I went and I found this PDF of a cookbook from, I guess it might have been early 30s, maybe. No, it was probably about 27 because the book had been out for a couple of years. And the recipe before it in the PDF was the recipe before grandma's, you know, the one I was looking at. Word for word. She must have really liked that cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, Xerox wasn't the thing. You couldn't just Xerox it. So,
I mean, you have to sit down, right? I mean, that's a commitment.
Mm-hmm. Must have been really good.
I'd be willing to cook some things out of there. The one thing I'm not going to do is, like, there's some anti-wrinkle cream and there's some, I think there's some sunspot cream in there too. And I won't be going there. But yeah, I could see picking some things out of there and doing it. Yeah, totally. I'm down with that. Who is that? I like that idea. Thank you.
I haven't even known who says it.
That's a great idea.
It's awesome. It's absolutely brilliant. So thank you so much for doing this. It's been a blast. I always like to ask at the end, is there something we haven't talked about that you would like to hear?
Oh, boy. I'm finding that cocktails are really interesting to me. This is really new. Doing the cocktail at the top of the stream and having to think through pairing it with the meal. Sometimes it's poorly paired, but it sounded good at the moment. And then when I go, this doesn't go together at all. Because I really don't know anything about cocktails. I mean, that's facts, y'all. I'm really good at drinking, but I am not a bartender. I'm not a mixologist. I am doing this on the fly and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to just try something new and see how it all goes together. You know, bourbon, that just sounded gross before. Now it's really good. I'm going to be diving in more to the cocktail side of the house in terms of how does this go with what it is I'm cooking?
Mm-hmm.
And I try not to lead with the cocktail. I don't want to let the cocktail define what dinner is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Or the other way around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, that's that. Food is interesting for a lot of people, and it's one of the things that brings us all together. And that's probably what I value the most about it is that sense of community that I get when I think about food.
Absolutely. I'm 100% with you. And I think that's something, maybe that's also something why I mean, why are you doing it on YouTube? But I think also, it's a good time for that. I think a lot of people are missing that. I mean, we used to get together for, like, I used to invite whatever, 20 people to, like, basically have an, like, not an orgy in the traditional sense, but, like, food on.
Oh, yeah.
Too, way too much food, so that, like, basically you shouldn't eat the day before and the day after. That's kind of my type of, like, getting together and cooking together with friends. I haven't done that in forever. And I think a lot of people are missing that community and that part.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that across the counter time. I mean, uh-huh. I think about when we used to go to parties, where were we? You know, we were around the table uh-huh. where the food was,
yeah.
or we were in the kitchen talking yeah. to the person cooking the food. And that's really defining for uh-huh. a lot of social for people. And
yes.
we have kind of become a little undefined in this uh-huh. time.
That's you know, true.
It's really easy, especially for those of us who are alone, to get out of those habits mm-hmm. of taking care of ourselves in those ways. So mm-hmm. hopefully, you know, things like what you're doing with this podcast and what I'm doing with the stream, that will give people some of what's been missing. That would be the joy for me.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. When you're talking about like being on the kitchen, there's one song that defines me. I think it's Jonah Newell. And IKEA used it a couple of years ago, like I did a new version. It's basically you can always find me in the kitchen at parts.
Oh, nice.
And I'm like, yes, that is me.
That's you. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for doing this. It's been a blast. It's been like basically time went by. I've tried to take notes and have some links for everything. So the listeners will be able to find that on foodiefactor.com in the future. Great. Let the people, like, very important, where can people find you and your awesome show?
Right now, you can find me on YouTube at Silver Lining Home Place, and Home Place is one word. And I'm looking to get that site up to get recipes and everything here uh-huh. in the first quarter. So that's the goal. And it will be silverlaninghomeplace.com, but it is not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're at, what was it, SL Homeplace on Twitter, I think?
On where?
On Twitter.
Yes. I think on Twitter it's SL Homeplace. Yeah. And Instagram is silverlininghomeplace. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you.
And you can find
the Instagram feed is actually kind of nice. It has shown the food journey.
Mm-hmm.
That it never occurred to me until just now. That is the document that shows the food journey over the last year or so. And it really kicked off when a close friend of mine said, okay, you need to do this. And she came over, I want to say maybe it was Christmas Eve in 2020 mm-hmm. or maybe New Year's Day. I think it must have been Christmas Eve in 2020. And she handed me this cutting board that I can't show you right now. But it's a cutting board and it's got the Silver Lining Home Place logo engraved in it. And I just broke down in tears.
That's so cool.
It was just awesome. But in that moment, it was, this is my champion. This is the one person that I know who is always going to root for me. And that every time I look at that, I remember why I'm doing this. And it's pretty special. So you can see that in the Instagram feed. You'll see it there.
Awesome. Awesome last thought for everybody. All the links and like everything we talked about, as I said, also like Instagram, Twitter, website, YouTube channel, all of that will be on foodiefactbank.com. And also in your favorite podcast app, if you're listening to this after the fact, in your podcast app, just go to the description and you will also get all the links. So it's a very convenient place to find it. You can find this very podcast, as I said, on foodiefastback.com or at foodiefastback on Twitter. I think also there's a foodiefastback, no, there is definitely a foodiefastback Facebook page, which is not very active. I'm mostly on Twitter and now YouTube. So look for Foodie Flashback also on YouTube if you want to catch the live recording that I will keep doing from now on. And if you want to be on Foodie Flashback and foodie or not, whether you care about food or you've never cooked before, does not matter. Never done a podcast or like being on like a YouTube celebrity one. Then you can also just get in touch with me either on Twitter or there's a little like contact link on foodiecafe.com or just like reach out to me wherever you can find me. I'm on thepatrice.com. That's my little corner where I just post all the links and everything. And then you can also be a guest and also at my mother's door. It doesn't matter. I've literally interviewed people that have never done a podcast before. All you need is a microphone, some sort, like even a, like your phone. Headphones usually work. And a stable internet connection and a quiet corner somewhere. That. And then you can also be a guest on this show because I am trying to document every song I can find. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you again, Dina, for doing this. It was awesome.
Thanks for having me.
It's awesome also to do the first ever Foodie Flashback stream. And yeah, talk to you next time. Bye-bye.